Yeah, hey, this is Lucas Barfield, and you are tuned into the Cannabis Corner. Thanks for so much for tuning in. If this is the first time you tuned into our show, this is a show all about cannabis or marijuana, or also known as hemp. I am a Tacoma-based cannabis activist here in the state of Washington, as well as a cannabis educator. I teach a class at Tacoma Community College on the cannabis industry and another one at their Gig Harbor Cannabis, all about medical cannabis. To find out more about that, check them out over there at their website. Thank you. Thanks again so much for tuning in, and we're going to get right into our show. Our format of our show, we'd like to go through some headlines, and then we go over a larger topic or have a guest, and then we go out with our segment, It's a Bust, where we talk about the war on drugs and then talk all about people that are still getting arrested out there for this plant. This week, our topic is going to be all about the endocannabinoid system and the particular cannabinoids in the marijuana plant. So I want to get started first today with our headlines, and I want to talk about the legislative session that has just passed and some of the bills that made it through. There were some various changes to the industry, some changes to labeling, and some other things like that. They also changed how the marijuana authorization database was funded, and some other sort of, as they call them, housekeeping bills were passed. But some of the main bills that were passed that have an effect on us, and first of all you Radio Tacoma listeners will be familiar with the home grow bill, because we have a show running all about that with a guest, John Kingsbury, talking about the home grow bill here in Washington. I just wanted to let you know that bill did not make it through the 2019 session. It was able to get further than we ever got it before, so if you are somebody that called in and talked to your legislator about that, thank you so much. Keep calling, keep checking in with this, because this same bill will be open for the 2019 session, and Homegrow Washington, and you can contact them at homegrowwashington@gmail.com if you are interested in getting involved in this. They are still working hard on trying to get a Homegrow bill passed here in the state of Washington so that everybody in the state who is over 21 can grow 6 plants. And check out our show, like I said, on Radio Tacoma. It's playing, and it's all about that. You can also find that on our YouTube channel. So something we had talked about, the CBD and hemp was legalized in the 2018 Farm Bill. So states all around the country are passing hemp laws that you can grow hemp in the state of Washington, in their states. And so Washington did pass a hemp bill. It has some restrictions, of course, but they are going to start actually studying how to go about setting up their industrial hemp system here in the state. So that is moving forward. They also passed a bill that would allow the court. So this is for people who have been convicted of a cannabis possession misdemeanor. So this bill would allow the court to vacate those crimes. So anybody who was arrested just for a simple possession between I believe it's early 1990s all the way up to 2012, you can get your possession vacated or expunged. Now, this is more than what the governor did earlier this year when he did the Marijuana Justice Initiative, where he said that he would pardon you if you had a cannabis crime. This will actually expunge or vacate that crime off of your record. So this will allow you to say, no, I've never been convicted of a crime, if that crime was your only crime. You know, I like this bill. I think it's a good thing, but it leaves out a lot of people. So we're going to get into that a little more in a future date. But this is a step forward in erasing some of the damage done by the war on drugs, which we all know has a disproportionate effect on communities of colors and poor people. And so hats off to the state for moving forward on this. A lot of activists and a lot of groups have been working on this all the way since 2012. And your host here, Lucas Barfield, was able to get a resolution passed in the 29th and 28th Democrats LDs on this issue too. So thank you so much for people in those legislative districts and other ones around the state who have been working on this. This is something that has needed to happen, and it's happening all around the country. I believe there is actually one on the national level sponsored by Cory Booker that wants to get rid of marijuana crimes all over the country. So that would be a very good thing. So they passed another bill, and this one is all about royalties. And third parties, meaning just regular citizens, can now get into the cannabis industry a little easier if you have an idea or a product that you want to sell on the cannabis market. You can actually work with a producer, a processor, or perhaps even a retailer to do a royalty deal. And you can't make any more than 10% royalties, but you can get your deal, your product out there, and get a little bit of this green economy. I don't know if you know this or not, but basically all the licenses in the state, the retail license, the processor license, and the producer licenses, the Liquor Control Board had a lottery for this all the way back in 2013. And then they actually gave out some more retail licenses later on to some of the medical cannabis retail stores, but not that many. So all the licenses have been sold out or bought up. So the LCB is not issuing any more licenses. So it's really hard to get in on the ground floor of the cannabis industry in this state because there's no more licenses. Now, you can open up an ancillary business or do like 1099 businesses for the cannabis industry, but you can't really, it's really hard to get your own idea into the market. And this bill will actually allow people who have ideas, entrepreneurs who want to get into the industry, to approach different producers, processors, and retailers and actually get their product out on the market. And so that was basically some of the main bills that would affect just regular Washingtonians. There were some other bills that would, like I said, tighten up the industry. And then they passed two bills that will actually help medical cannabis patients. Now, they did leave one on the table about the medical cannabis excise tax, but hopefully, I think I was looking at something. I'm pretty sure that that might come around and get passed next year, hopefully with our homegrown bill. So they passed two bills, and these kind of go hand in hand. And so the first one is the Compassionate Renewal Bill. And what this allows people to do is if you are not able to leave your home, or you can't take, or you're a designated provider and you can't take your patient out of the home to get your medical cannabis card renewed, then you can actually do it by using a phone or other telemedicine technologies. And then you can also do the same thing with your medical cannabis registration, because remember, there's two steps in Washington if you want to get full medical cannabis benefits. You first have to go get qualified by a doctor, and then you have to take that information into one of these stores, a retail store, and get your picture taken and get put on the medical marijuana authorization database. And so this bill will allow people to just do that from home that are too sick. And so then the next bill, this bill actually allows cannabis to come to our schools. Yes, there are kids that use medical cannabis, and you have to be 18 to get a medical cannabis card, but if you're under 18, you can have your parents come with you and get your medical cannabis for you. And if you're in schools, up until now, they did have a thing that said schools, they didn't have to, but they sort of advised schools to allow people to take CBD at schools. The districts have a big, not necessarily a problem with this, but an issue with this, because they're worried about their federal funding. So OSPI down in Olympia is still looking at this to see if this is okay. If the federal government doesn't try to stop this or remove funding, then they're going to go ahead with this. And this will allow parents, and parents only, not nurses or anybody else at the school, just to protect them, because again, cannabis is federally illegal. And so nobody else can touch it except for the parents. And this will allow parents to bring in, I'm going to make sure I get the official term, cannabis-infused products to the students. And that has a specific definition of a cannabis product with no more THC in it than 10%. So it can't be an extract, or it can't be a homemade cookie that might have THC greater than 10%. It has to be basically an official cannabis-infused product from one of these stores. And then that's what the parent can give to the students. Now, they could possibly, this is going to be open to interpretation, and actually I've reached out to some school districts to try to kind of help them through this process. I mean, does that mean you got to syringe with 100 milligrams of THC in it. If you give them just one dose, which would be just 10 milligrams, does that count? And can they give them 10 milligrams, wait 2 minutes, give them another 10 milligrams, wait 2 minutes, give them another 10 milligrams? Because some of these students and actually individuals who are extremely sick with some more severe issues and use medical cannabis, they need large doses of medical cannabis, 10, 20, 30, 40 milligrams, even as high as 100. And if you're a cancer patient, sometimes 800, 900 to 1,000 milligrams of THC a day. And that is a lot. And so hopefully the schools work this out and the students are able to get what they need. Now, this is this is a historic thing for Washington because we are only one of five other states that do this. So not a lot of other states doing this, just to simply, cannabis and schools and drugs. And we've all been taught that those don't go together. But if kids need it for their medicine, then they need to get it. So hats off. Good job, Washington, getting those passed. And so those are just some of the bills that made it through Olympia. I was a little disappointed by the session because the excise tax and the homegrown bill did not pass. However, these bills were pretty good. So it was a pretty good session for cannabis. And again, this session is still going to be open basically for 2 years. And so in 2020, the session next year, hopefully they'll be able to pass some of these bills. And this is going to be next year is the election year, so it's going to be a lot of stuff going on. And so I predict that the homegrown bill and possibly some more medical cannabis bills will go through. So yeah, we're going to move on to some other headlines. That was a lot there, so we're going to kind of speed up here a little bit. The next headline I want to go over is Eli Lilly apparently had a giant medical cannabis farm back in the early 1900s, and they won't come clean on it. And this is being brought forth by a guy named Fred Feniger, and he's a Republican lawyer out of Indiana, and he used to work for Eli Lilly, and he has proof of this, and this was in Greenfield, Indiana, and they won't, and he has some pictures that show an old there's an old building that's still there, is apparently where they did all the extractions. It was 156 acres they had planted with these cannabis plants. And he tried to get the corporation, Eli Lilly, to admit to this. He submitted a shareholders resolution, and they just ignored it, and they won't tell all. So, I mean, we all kind of already knew this. I mean, I've talked about this before. Bayer, they invented aspirin from the bark of a willow tree, and then put the corner on that market, and then went after cannabis because cannabis was basically a competitor to aspirin and a lot of other pharmaceuticals. So they joined up with Eli Lilly and whoever else, and basically spent the first part of the 1900s and just had a worldwide campaign against cannabis. Come out to one of my classes and maybe hear more about that. But I do feel that it was a worldwide campaign against this, and I have a little bit of proof to back that up. It's just a big cover up, and Eli Lilly will not come clean on this. So next up is a headline. It's from from about 2 months ago, and I'm kind of bringing this to you late just because we haven't recorded a show in a while, but I wanted to cover this. This was in Missouri, and thanks for Louisa over there at Radio Tacoma for sending me this headline, actually. A man in Missouri had his hospital room raided because somebody reported him for having medical cannabis, and he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer. One of the worst cancers out there as far as being terminal. The police came in, searched his bag. Somebody said they smelled smoke in the room, but the man said he wasn't smoking cannabis. The doctor did try to stand up for him, saying, can't be in here. You don't want to be taking his stuff. But they, of course, it's the police, so they did it anyway. And they found some, I think they gave him a citation for having some capsules. And when they said, hey, medical cannabis is legal in Missouri, the police just said, well, yeah, it passed, but they don't actually have the law in place. So we're still going to give you a citation for this. And as we talked about before, medical cannabis is still a controlled substance on the federal level. So these are state officers or local officers actually coming in enforcing federal law. And as I've said, I think a lot of times the police, they're not trying, you know, it's just their job. It's habit. They have been taught all these years, and it's just a habit. Okay, somebody called, they got marijuana. Okay, let's go get them. And they just still have not gotten used to that the world is changing, and you can't just barge into somebody's hospital room and take their medical cannabis from them, because that's actually a medicine. It's not that, you know, it's almost 2020, and we're moving past that. And even in Missouri, they have a medical cannabis law that's being rolled out. So change is coming, but it's still coming slowly. And hopefully hopefully he files a lawsuit against the police or something, stands up and says, no, you can't do this to me. So next up, I want to talk about a article I just wrote earlier this week. And it is on the University of Washington is doing a study on pregnant women and cannabis. And believe it or not, so right now the Liquor Control Board just came out with a new rule. And they said on every retail cannabis shop door or window or somewhere in the store must be displayed a sign that says, to sum it up, just says, do not use cannabis. Avoid cannabis if you are breastfeeding and pregnant. And then underneath there, they list out all the different organizations, American Association of Pediatrics and American, you know, all these other letter salad acronym organizations. But did you know there is no actual legitimate scientific research that says that cannabis is bad for a woman and a child when she's pregnant? Now, I'm certainly not suggesting that you use cannabis when you're pregnant, because, you know, talk to your doctor about that. But I'm just going off about this research, this article. It's over at the UW press release in their med school there. All the studies that say don't use cannabis when you're pregnant have come from women that also use alcohol, tobacco, and illicit drugs. And they just tacked on there, okay, what do you use? I drink, yep. Do you smoke, yep. Do you use illicit drugs, yep. Do you use marijuana, yep. And so they just put the marijuana, they lumped the cannabis in there with those substances. Well, here's the trouble with that. Cannabis is a very different thing than alcohol and then tobacco and then illicit drugs. I mean, you could say it has some similarities to some drugs just because of it actually works directly on like serotonin. CBD binds to serotonin receptors. Also, some cannabis compounds deal with dopamine and things like that. So some drugs actually have some things in common with cannabis, but none of those other illicit drugs actually have a system in your body like the endocannabinoid system that interacts directly with cannabis. I mean, it's a direct link from the endocannabinoid system to the cannabis cannabis plant. And so none of these other drugs or substances really have that. And so to lump them all in together just seems a little, and then for the medical establishment to go along with this all these years saying, we say no cannabis when you're pregnant, when it's not even based in anything scientific, it just adds for me more things in the cannabis realm that aren't based on science. I mean, it's just another one. On and on, it's just over and over again. We have the rest with African Americans. We have the indica sativa thing. We have the terpenes. We have put some beer on your plant if the leaves turn yellow. We just have all this stuff in cannabis is not based in anything scientific or real. And now here comes another one. And this one's actually from the people that we trust, these organizations and doctors, been putting out all this false information for all these years. So these researchers at the University of Washington say, okay, we're actually going to do a study where we look specifically at pregnant women who only use cannabis. And so they're getting together 70 women, 35 in a test group, 35 in a control group. By the way, they're still looking for people. If you're interested, contact the University of Washington. You can do an easy Google search and find out more about this. And so you can get into this study if you're pregnant in less than 13 weeks. And this is for people that only use cannabis roughly twice a week, and they're using it for morning sickness. And the researchers point out that a lot of pharmaceuticals that are for morning sickness, like thalidomide, which was one that was back in the 60s, has some severe side effects for women and infants. And so they're just trying to see if cannabis is something that pregnant women can use to help treat morning sickness. Not to mention all the women that get pregnant that have a legitimate medical cannabis diagnosis or qualifying conditions. I mean, so you have multiple sclerosis and you get pregnant and you've been using cannabis full plant extract to treat your MS, and then you're just all of a sudden supposed to stop using and then or taking the cannabis and while you're pregnant. I mean, maybe you should, but here again, there's no actually scientific proof to back that up. So these researchers are doing a great thing and going ahead and trying to see whether cannabis is actually harmless to the infants. And so they're going to test the women all through pregnancy. They're going to give them drug tests. They're going to do functional or scans of them. After the babies are born, they're going to bring the infants back in at 6 months, and they're going to do tests. They're going to test their motor skills, some social skills, other cognitive abilities, and then they're going to put the kids going to go into a functional MRI, actually. Let me say that right. A functional MRI. And these are one of the an MRI that they can stimulate you or do something to you and then register where how your brain is working. So they're going to test whether they're really concerned that the cannabinoids in the cannabis will affect parts of the brain that are associated with reward and addiction. So that's one of the things they're specifically going to check. You know, I don't really know how this study is going to turn out. I do see some problems with the research design, just because cannabis does have pesticides on it, and they're not using DOH cannabis, so they might be getting contaminated cannabis. You never know. You don't know. I mean, hopefully they'll factor out genetic predispositions to some of the things they're testing. So we will see how this study turns out, and I will keep you posted. So I want to go into our topic right now, and I'm going to go into this, and this is our we're going to talk about the endocannabinoid system real quick. And as I've said before, and I always do this as a disclaimer, I'm not a doctor or a nurse. I am just someone, I have a master's degree in education, but just somebody who can do really good research, and I read a lot and pay attention and can gather information together. And so do not take anything I say today as any kind of medical advice, even though we will be talking about some medical issues. I am not recommending that anybody use cannabis to treat anything. Just telling you about the endocannabinoid system. So everybody has in their body an endocannabinoid system. And cannabinoids are a group of compounds out there in nature and in our bodies. And so we're going to differentiate between two types of cannabinoids. One would be an endocannabinoid. And so this is a cannabinoid in your body that our own body produces. And the most common one is called andamide. And it is produced in your body in small amounts. And then the second type of cannabinoid are called phytocannabinoids, or as I sometimes call them, exocannabinoids. And these are cannabinoids outside your body that are found in nature. And in our case, they're found in the cannabis plant. Now, they are found in other plants as well, but they have been, by human intervention, been bred to be very, very high in the cannabis plant, and probably were already pretty high to begin with, but we have changed those and produced, we like two cannabinoids more than the other ones, THC and CBD, and so we have bred cannabis plants to be high in these two compounds. And the way this works is, in your body you have receptors. And so if you remember back from high school biology, they talk about the lock and key hypothesis. And this is for hormones. This is for serotonin and dopamine receptors. There's all these receptors in your body in the central and peripheral nervous system. And in our case, when we talk about cannabinoids, we talk about two cannabinoids, and we talk about, or two cannabinoid receptors, we talk about the CB1 and the CB2 receptors. Now CBD, and so picture this. In your body, you have your CB1 and CB2 receptors, and your body is producing the anandamide, okay? That is, and then these receptors are responsible for bringing balance to individual cells or organs or systems in your body. And so, but when you get sick, your body gets out of balance. And there has been some research that has shown that let's say you get liver disease, the liver will actually produce more CB1 and CB2 receptors trying to get more anandamide into your liver or attached to those receptors to bring balance to your cells. Well, we can use THC and CBD to come in and attach to those receptors and stimulate the endocannabinoid system even more. And THC is the primary binder to this system. Now, CBD does bind to CB1 and CB2 receptors, but not as much as THC. That's why when you see all this CBD craze going on out there, and you always hear people, well, THC gets you high, but CBD's better because it does it. Well, that could be true in some cases, but if we look at a simple medicinal fact, the THC binds way more to this endocannabinoid system than CBD. Now, having said that, CBD does bind to serotonin receptors and other hormone receptors in the body, and so it can be way more, it can be medicinal in other ways than THC. And so this is why we always say you want to take a full plant approach when you use cannabis, because you want to make sure you're covering your bases to stimulate both these CB1 and CB2 receptors and other systems and receptors in your body. So CB1 receptors are found in the, I want to make sure I get all these right, in the brain, in the GI tract, in your liver, cardiovascular system, skeletal system, your muscle system, your skin, your eyes, your adipose tissues, which is like your fat tissues, in your reproductive system, in your immune system, and in cancer cells. CB2 receptors, these are more that they're not found as much in your brain, but more into your in your body. Found in the immune cells, in your GI tract, liver, your bone, your adipose tissues, reproductive system, and then some in the brain, but not as many. And so basically these receptors are kind of found, and I apologize for the reading there. I have to use a screen reader, so I kind of read slow when I'm going down through lists. So thank you for your patience there. But, yeah, these receptors are basically found all over the body, more CB1 in the brain than the other ones. But this is why I always say if you want to differentiate between CBD and THC and what they do for you and how they help you, you really have to get really detailed, because they're almost exactly the same. They have a lot of the same functions and a lot of the same things in the body. So this is why we always say, again, full plant approach. Some CBD, some THC, some high THC, some high CBD. Just want to kind of mix it up all the time. And if you're somebody that's saying, well, I can't take THC because I get too high, just talk about that for a second. You can do something called the titrate method, or what you do is you build up a tolerance to your THC. And so then that will allow you to take THC and you don't really get quote unquote high. You just kind of stay leveled off because you don't, and you do what's called microdosing. So you don't smoke like a whole entire cannabis cigarette or a joint. You might smoke just a little portion of it. And so that way you don't get even, that way you can stay medicated or take your medicine more often, and it's more beneficial that way rather than just smoking your whole entire stash there and then you get super high and you can't go anywhere and you can't talk to anybody or anything like that. And so that's how you can use THC and CBD together. And then CBD, they always say, well, CBD doesn't give you high. Well, every time I use CBD, I get some kind of feeling off of it. So it does do something in your body as far as making a physical change. Now, whether you want to call that high or not, that's up to you. Now, I think they just don't want to say you get you high because it's the United States and, oh, you don't want to get high. You don't want to be feeling good. That's just that's terrible. Just want to feel bad all the time. So these cannabinoids, we'll talk about phytocannabinoids real quick. So the cannabis plant has more than just the THC and the CBD. Now, the THC and the CBD, these are what are called activated cannabinoids. So when you just pick off a flower off a cannabis plant and you look at it and you see all those crystals all over it, there is no actual THC and CBD on that plant, okay? You got to heat it up and do what's called decarboxylate the THCA and the CBDA to turn it into CBD and THC. That's why you smoke cannabis with a lighter or a match or something with heat, high heat source. And if you're going to cook with it, that's how cannabis becomes activated when you cook with it, because it gets up to 350 or more. But usually, and so that's what's called decarboxylation or activation. And you know, we can kind of get more into that, but then we kind of get into the THC CBD coefficient 0.87, and we can kind of get into some moles and some chemistry and stuff like that, but we'll save that for another day. So I want to go over the actual cannabinoids in the cannabis plant, and it's like a little list here, but I think there's way more than this, but these are the main ones they have identified. So the first one is the famous one, tetrahydrocannabinol, and then there's a tetrahydrocannabinol acid, and so that's the THCA, and that is the famous one that gives everybody a high. Remember, it interacts with the CB1 and then some of the CB2 receptors. And of course, we have the other one. It's like going through a rebirth right now and a renaissance. I mean, there's just CBD everywhere. Is a cannabidiol or cannabidiol. And this one is sort of a THC cousin. And it also has a acidic. So that would be cannabidiolic acid or CBDA. And then the next one is cannabigerolic. CBG, I have a hard time saying that with my southern accent. And so that one is also, but this one is cancer fighting, and but it's in a lot of strains. It's in very, very small amounts, but it is out there, and it also has a acidic form, which I will spare you from trying to pronounce. So the next one is cannabichromic, and this one also has an acidic form, cannabichromic acid, and this is CBC. So then here's one is cannabinol, and so this one is CBN, and if you notice, this is tetrahydrocannabinol. This is it without the tetrahydro, and so this is just THC that's been degraded, and that is actually how CBN is formed, is from cannabis that has dried out too much. You get CBN, or old cannabis. Will have a lot of high concentration of CBN, which makes sense because you just got rid of your four hydro or waters there on the THC. So the next one is tetrahydrocannabivirin or THCV. And then there's cannabivirin and CBDV. And so that, and that is our main list of cannabinoids. And these all have various medicinal functions, but for the most part, cannabinoids are known for their antifungal, antibacterial, antiviral, anti-inflammatory, and cancer-fighting properties. And so all those sort of have, that's what they have in common. Now, as we've said, the THC and the CBD are the main ones, but a lot of people are starting to find that CBG is something that will help fight cancer. And so that is our topic for today. I hope I covered everything there with the endocannabinoid system, just to give you enough information to go out there and kind of check in on this yourself, and to kind of just to see why actually cannabis works the way it works. When you put that lighter to your bowl and you inhale and then you exhale, you know, why are you getting the effect? And some people don't like this, but, and I always hear this, does cannabis really treat all that stuff? And the answer is yes. And if we look at the science and what we just went over, the reason is why? Send me an email at emailmmcws, if you want to answer that question, at gmail.com. Why does cannabis treat all those different conditions? And there's a really good scientific reason for that. And it really does, and it is effective for a lot of different things. So that's my little talk about medical cannabis. So we're going to get into our final segment here, and that is It's a Bust. And so this was out of Georgia. A man and woman were found with 600 pounds of cannabis. They were also found with cocaine and ecstasy at the same time. So they first of all, some people were found with, were arrested with 35, pulled over with 3,500 ecstasy pills. And then these people told the police about the people with where they got it from, and they went to the warehouse and they found the other folks with 600 pounds. And that is a lot of cannabis, and that was in Georgia. And as we see, the war on drugs is still going on out there. Even though cannabis is being legalized all over the place, they still are arresting people. And in fact, I just saw a story that's going around right now. A lady in Florida, which has medical cannabis, by the way, a full plant medical cannabis system, on its way to being as good or better than Washingtonians or the Washington medical cannabis system, she was arrested at Walt Disney World for having CBD. So people are still getting arrested out there. African Americans are three times more likely to get arrested for cannabis than any other group. And so we just really need to pay attention to this and keep fighting against this. Call your congressman in Washington, D.C., call them locally, and let's end the war on cannabis. My name is Lucas Barfield. Thanks again so much for tuning into the Cannabis Corner. If you want to get in touch with me, you can follow me on Twitter at MJNIsMedicine, or as I said, you can email me at emailmmcws@gmail.com. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.